Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats, silence your cell phones, for you are now listening to Much Ado About Wrestling!
Welcome, fair listeners, to Much Ado About Wrestling, the show that explores the theatrical conventions and the world of professional wrestling. I'm one half of your scholarly presenters, Andrew Terrence Caberline, and with me, as always, is the devil himself, Tyler Ward. Tyler, I feel like maybe Adam Cole stole your thunder here.
Well, I mean, that may be the case, but the question is, Andrew, do you have sympathy for me?
For you, yeah, you're a nice guy, Tyler.
Nice.
I have sympathy for you, for sure.
You and the Stones, man, that's about it.
I almost expect people to kind of like wink every time they talk about sympathy with a devil character on wrestling television programs, but no one ever. Maybe I can hear the wink in their voice, even if they're not winking.
Eyes. Yeah, it's the subtext.
I've already kind of forgotten. At any point during his run, did MJF come out to Sympathy for the Devil?
Or
did they like use it for like 10 seconds kind of
thing? They did it the before like the reveal, right? When like he came out and like claimed the whatever that ladder match where like he won the right to challenge. I think that might have been the only time. I can't recall if, like, he, MJF, came out to that song.
Yeah, I think he did. And I feel like the next day Mick Jagger got an email and was like, I'm putting a stop to this. I imagine that's what happened.
Perhaps, yeah.
So
Andrew, the big reveal, though, of Adam Cole being the devil, the undisputed kingdom, what are your thoughts?
Ooh, man. I feel like if anyone is disappointed with it, we only have ourselves to blame kind of thing. You know, I think that like that it is the most logical answer in the way that the story was built, right?
Yes.
And the story absolutely suggests this. It is the correct answer, but only because all the side characters were equally as interesting as like red herrings. Did I feel like we all started being like, ooh, maybe it is someone next level, maybe we really are supposed to be like swerving away, you know, no pun intended, from the obvious answer. So I think like we should all be disappointed in ourselves and like channel that energy into booing the new ultra heel version of Adam Cole, right?
Sure.
Is that how you felt? Like, were you disappointed at all?
It is the correct answer. I accept that. Yes, it's the right one. I think again, this is really just a me problem. I have got to stop like fantasy booking myself into disappointment.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Like, it's just that when I'm given the option of coming up with the answer myself, I'm always going to, you know, stretch it a little too far than is reasonable. Again, right answer. I'm okay with it. I do appreciate in Adam Cole's promo last night on Dynamite where they, you know, was introducing this new faction, the Undisputed Kingdom. And when he was breaking down like how the belts were going to go. And he's like, my best friend, Roddy, he's going to go for the International Championship. And then Wardlow, he's going to go for the AEW World Championship. And when the time is right, he's going to do the right thing and relinquish it to me. And I just thought, oh, thank you, Adam. Thank you for already letting me know how this faction's going to implode.
Yeah. I mean, okay. What are the chances that Wardlow, is Wardlow going to be the next challenger to Joe?
I don't
think. Is it Swerve?
I, I don't think so. It should be Swerve. I hope it's not Swerve because I don't want Joe to lose this early, and I don't want Swerve to lose right now. So yeah. I don't know.
It's a tough. It's tough because Joe certainly feels like a transitionary champion. Yeah. It feels like they didn't want MJF to lose to whoever they're gonna go to next.
It's unfortunate because like I could think of some cool names who would be interesting. Like one, like unfortunately, like he's kind of deep involved in a story. But like I'd be pretty interested to see Samoa Joe versus Adam Copeland for that belt.
Yeah, I don't think like, that's
a high profile match. But yeah, that's not happening. So
he, I mean, that story is not over.
not even the slightest.
And I think that's probably it's gonna go through. I don't know. Do they keep Adam Copeland tied to Christian through All In? Is the idea to have like their actual big match there? That's a long way away.
So they got to have the rubber match because they've already had two.
Yeah.
And then the question is: is the post rubber match when they finally come together and then we get the Edge and Christian tag team run that we've been waiting for?
Yeah, maybe that's the All In match. Honestly, so yeah, I guess you could have Adam Copeland, you know, step out of direct line of fire with Christian, go after Samoa Joe and have Christian, you know, rear his ugly head during that too. The problem is they're like all the people who are really hot right now in the company are heels and like Joe included. Although I guess you could make Joe a face against Swerve or Wardlow. I don't know. It's tough. It's tough. Yeah. I don't know who is the number one baby face at the top of the AEW card right now.
I mean, it was MJF.
Is it Darby?
maybe Darby. MJF is about to take some time off. Kenny's hurt.
Yeah. It's like Darby, Adam Copeland, Hangman.
Mox.
Yeah, I don't know. It's tough to call Mox a face, too.
Yeah, like, well,
Eddie Kingston, but he's busy, and Orange Cassidy is busy.
He can't be like, Eddie four belts. That's just crazy.
Well, I don't know. We'll see. We've run over already into the thing that we were supposed to be talking about in segment one. It's all good. New year, same podcast. So in the second half of this podcast, we're going to do one of the most contrived ideas I've ever had and do not New Year's resolutions, but New Year's resolutions.
New Year's resolutions.
Oh, that's better. Oh, man. That is so much better. But yeah, we're going to take people in the world of professional wrestling and hypothetically come up with what we think their ethos, their resolution for this next year should be. But before that, I can't remember a year where there were so many big supercard pay-per-view events like between Christmas and New Year's. Like,
yeah,
this is insane. So we're going to run through them real quick and talk about the interesting points, including, you know, the reveal of the devil, as we talked about at AEW World's End. And then we're going to touch on New Japan's Wrestle Kingdom 18, which happened earlier this morning, if you're
in Easter time.
Yeah. And then look forward to tomorrow, to Friday's SmackDown New Year's Revolution, which is, you know, a show that is going to set a lot of what the card is at the Royal Rumble.
Yes.
So World's End, the biggest storyline thing that happened was the reveal of the devil, and it coming after the kind of shocking title loss of MJF dropping the title to Samoa Joe, which maybe was a little bit less shocking after his Players Tribune article that had come out that day. You had a huge reaction to that. What were your thoughts, or what were the biggest takeaways from his article? Those who haven't read it,
I have not read the article, but I've heard enough people commenting about it. Specifically, lots of people being like, in a weird way, this was almost a spoiler. Like,
Oh, not even in a weird way, Tyler. In a very
like you could easily take from this article that like he was losing that belt.
Yeah.
So it's just a lot of people calling into questioning the timing of the release. Like, there's no way that AEW was okay with that. Like,
I don't know. I think I saw a lot of people's reactions to the article, and the article was great. I highly recommend it. It's like a very funny and serious read. I saw people equally reacting to it as like, well, this is 100% assurance that MJF is gonna, it's like done with AEW and going to WWE and vice versa. And I don't really, I'm probably closer to reading it being like, oh, I don't think he's going anywhere, but, to each their own. Like, it certainly didn't seem like 100% sure in either direction when reading it. But I think maybe there's a reason that people haven't done pay-per-views right in between two of the biggest holidays and travel seasons of the year. And I think maybe the Players Tribune article was strategically released to kind of drum up some more interest and be like, hey, Long Island people, this might be your last chance to see MJF as world champion, so come out to Nassau Coliseum, you know.
Yeah.
I think it made me be like, ooh, I have to make sure I see what happens here. But it was also the first real critically disliked pay-per-view that AEW has had in their short history. What do we make of that? Why do we think it kind of was a dud? Do we think it was truly that bad? People were immediately not very happy with the pay-per-view.
Yeah. I mean, I can't speak to, you know, a lot of people's opinions on exactly why. I know for me personally,
you to speak for other people, Tyler. That's what I'm asking. No, sorry. Continue.
For me personally, it definitely wasn't my favorite pay-per-view of theirs, even in the past year. And I think a lot of that had to do, it could have just been, you know, specifically with that article, it did kind of feel like maybe the main event was a little spoiled there. Like, we did have the hopeful reveal of the devil to look forward to. But honestly, the rest of the card felt kind of lackluster, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
While again, I accept that it was the correct answer, but like Eddie Kingston winning the whole Continental Classic,
yeah,
wasn't my first choice, and honestly, the finals being him and Mox was definitely not my first choice. So like, yeah. I wasn't very into that. Tony and Riho, while that's a great match, like we've seen that match before, we know Tony's not losing at this point in her run.
Yeah.
The Christian Adam Copeland match, it, you know, again, I don't think anyone expected this to be the end of the story, and with the little like swerve at the end to get
the dusty right finish was
very, I think that took a lot of the wind out of that arena.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think like there's something where I feel like you and I don't see eye to eye with the way that Adam Copeland approaches long no DQ matches. I remember our response to the Adam Copeland versus Randy Orton WrestleMania,
the greatest match of all time.
No, I like the greatest match of all time, but I'm talking about their no DQ match at COVID WrestleMania, going through the backstage that just felt like it was forever.
Yeah, that's right.
This felt similar to that to me, but I thought it was better than that match. But I do agree with you that it could have been a 5-star classic in the second that you did that that dusty finish after kind of how underwhelming the show was up until that point. It was like dead in the water, and like I guess like some of these things feel you know, like bad luck, like people having an off night. I know that there were botches in the Willow and Chris Statlander match, and
yep.
I know that there were some other missed spots or botches elsewhere.
I think, and again, like this is also AEW has had an issue with a lot of injuries of late.
Sure.
There's a lot of people missing from TV that, like, we don't
diverticulitis pops up when you least want it to happen.
We have a lot of people missing, and we haven't really been given explanations of why they're gone. Like, when's the last time we saw Britt Baker? I mean...
Oh, she talked about that today. I don't know if you saw that interview. She had an interview where she said that she's like, I listened to the fans. It was kind of like a half in character interview.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's like, I really listened to the fans. We listened to the fans. And I heard a lot of people saying that they were seeing too much Britt Baker. So I was like, she's made it sound like she intentionally was like, I'm going to take a step back until people want to see me again. So,
yeah. And that could be, yeah. I mean, that could be, you know, her own personal opinion on that. But I just, it does feel like it is a overall downtime for AEW, whether or not that's their own fault or if they're just trying to do the best they can with what they have available.
Yeah, I think it's the end of a cycle of storylines that I think people were into the top of the card and not into the bottom of the card in terms of, like, storyline prominence, and now I'm hopeful that there's now a reshuffling that you can do. But I think also, like, you maybe they could have anticipated but didn't that, like, some of the matches would be dead in the water no matter what, like Miro and Andrade, because we know that Andrade is leaving the company criminally at that point. And I mean, you could not you could not predict that, you know, Sting in his farewell tour would be paired up with someone that night who, you know, had sexual abuse allegations come out against them that day. Bad timing to reunite Lay Sex Gods.
Yes, very bad timing.
That was a tough one. Would you have... if you were Tony, would you have been like, ooh, maybe we don't do this match? Like, is it too late at that point?
It could have been that Tony looked at the card and was like, if I get rid of the Jericho match on this card, like, what else do we have? Essentially, like, at that point, Jericho is like one of your top four names on the card. Like, if you were to pull him at that point, I mean, it's like, geez, all right, well.
Yeah, it's tough after having, you know, the hottest wrestler in the company other than MJF is Swerve. I think that's, like, not debatable.
Sure. Yeah,
and, you know, having his opponent, his very logical opponent of Keith Lee pulled for Dustin Rhodes also, like, really...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Took away energy from the show. You know, nothing against Dustin, who filled in great, but, like, the stakes were not there. It was just a weird, wonky show.
It was a weird show. It felt 100%. It felt more like one of those special Dynamites than a pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Which, honestly, is probably what it should have been. Like,
it would have made it better, I think. Or it would have made people less sour on it.
I'm going back to this, and I'm going to keep harping on this. Like, I just wish AEW would go back to the 4 pay-per-views a year. I don't like that they're adding
this
more.
This was 8 this year.
Yeah. I don't like them adding more. Just go back to the 4. It was simple. It was great. It made me look forward to the pay-per-views. Like,
I'll argue that 6 is the right number for them. I think sticking to the original 4 and then having Forbidden Door, which feels like a different universe entirely.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's having
your crossover
in All In.
Like.
I think, like, those are the two that feel earned to me. Mm-hmm. Maybe, I don't know, maybe this will be the end of AEW's World's End. I could see a world where they don't do it.
If it only happens once, that's kind of poetic, if you think about it.
Yeah. I have a question, and I want to know if it's more of, it's a statement. I want to know if you agree with it or disagree with it and why. This is an essay question disguised in a podcast. Not to give you immediate just, like, flashbacks to the standards of learning.
I hate essay questions.
Yeah. The statement is, it is more important for AEW to deliver quality pay-per-views than it is for WWE. True or false?
True.
True. Mm-hmm. An immediate true. Didn't even immediate hesitate true. On this. All right, give me your reasons. Give me the reasons why it's more important for them.
My reasons are as follows. AEW, while yes, they have upped the number from 4 to 8, do not have as many premium live events as WWE. Therefore, the ones that they do have to stand out. AEW has always presented itself as the wrestling alternative to sports entertainment. Mm-hmm. So you would expect their in-ring product to be superior, to deliver, especially on a pay-per-view, an individual show that you are paying money to see. Again, AEW has in its 4 or 5 years now since its, birth, mm-hmm. it has touted itself on telling long-term stories, really great, engaging stories that the audience is interested in, wants to see, and ultimately likes and praises AEW for. And it's clear that within the last year, they have not delivered on that. The long-term stories they have given us either haven't actually mattered like they hoped it would, or due to either their own booking or things completely outside of their control, injuries, what have you. So they've had to change it, and it's just they haven't been able to deliver on that promise.
I think you kind of said this as a reason. I think it's the third reason why it's more important for AEW than WWE is the cost, and that even if you were spending the same amount of money on buying 6 to 8 AEW pay-per-views versus the money that you spend monthly on Peacock, mm-hmm. It certainly feels like you are handing over more money to watch AEW pay-per-views because they're not on a streaming service. Mm-hmm. You kind of forget about that monthly recurring charge.
At this point, I am 100% spending more on AEW pay-per-views. Sure.
Yeah, so there is more of an upfront.
Because I have the cheap Peacock with the commercials.
So
let's say it might be $5. But
ooh, I heard a calculator coming.
I'm breaking out the calculator. Let's be generous and say it's $8.
Yeah,
it's $96 a year to watch every WWE pay per view. That's that's not even 2 AEW pay per views.
So until, I don't know, maybe if AEW does move their pay-per-view model over to a streaming service, or if they really tier their pay-per-views so that other than the 4 big ones, they are much cheaper.
This is also a main support for my argument of why I want them to go back to 4 pay-per-views, is because again, when it was 4 pay-per-views a year, one every 3 months, it was easier for me to justify spending $50 a pop watching them. This isn't the 90s anymore. This isn't the early 2000s. Since the WWE Network and streaming has become available and we haven't had to individually pay for every pay-per-view, I don't think wrestling fans can or will go back to that model fully. There were 8 pay-per-views this year for AEW. I'm not gonna lie, I found ways to watch a few of them besides paying for them.
Yeah, this was the first time where I went to a bar to watch more than I did more than I bought them. I guess I probably spent more money at the bar now that I'm thinking about it, but it felt like I was it felt like I was getting more.
You were getting something more for cheap.
It's getting chicken fingers and alcohol out of it. So WWE can be, because their pay-per-views feel, because they're more frequent, but because they also feel cheaper, I feel like there's less pressure on them to be good, other than the Royal Rumble and WrestleMania. Everything else kind of doesn't see this pressure, and you give them a pass for whatever reason, because they're the industry leader. You're more excited and surprised when stuff goes really well than you are upset when things underwhelm.
Yeah. You
know? And I think that's the perk for being number one. Shifting to number one in Japan, the other biggest super card out there is Wrestle Kingdom. They had their 18th this year, this day, in fact, and the wee hours of the morning for us Eastern time people. This is kind of the most quiet that a Wrestle Kingdom has come and gone in the past few years for an American audience. I don't know if it actually is the same in Japan.
I would agree, at least on the American side for sure. Cause like it felt like I always know Wrestle Kingdom is the first week in January, but it definitely felt very like, Oh wait, Wrestle Kingdom was today. Like,
Was there anything that had you curious going into the show, Tyler? Or was there?
There are definitely matches I was interested in. Obviously, the number one for me was going to be Okada, Bryan Danielson.
Yeah.
We've seen the match, but for it to have been at that stage in the Tokyo Dome at Wrestle Kingdom, like, God, I'm sure that was incredible.
Yeah.
The main event, like Sonata versus Naito, I am and was hyped for this match. Like thinking about it, I'm like, oh yeah, that sounds great. I'm sure there's going to be a great match, great story behind it. But like at the end of the day, like I was just kind of like, you know, it's okay though. Maybe I'll watch it. Maybe I won't.
I think that is the match to go out of your way to watch.
Okay. And that makes sense. I'm not surprised by that at all.
I think to me, I was jaded on either of those people being the world champion. Mm-hmm. Because I just felt like they've really not neutered Naito, but they have not, like, when he has one, they don't do anything with it.
Right, yeah.
And Sonata has been a little, even though he's been the champion all year, has not been, like, felt to be as credible a threat as, like, Okada or Will Ospreay.
No, yeah, he's been kind of stale as a champion, I think.
Yeah. They really, because of the quality of the match and because of some real, like, Western style storytelling, after the match, they both really made it feel like Naito's first win, you know, like spoiler,
right?
But like they really made that feel like he finished his story. And they really legitimized Sonata actually like in defeat more than they have with him as the champion. So like hopefully that's like a wave they can ride going forward. But that was definitely like the big highlight in terms of like match quality, although Okada and Bryan Danielson was also great. But yeah, I felt like there wasn't a huge attraction on this match other than Okada and Danielson the way that there has been in recent New Japan years. But like I was also looking at the New Japan roster. You know how many people have left that company in the past year? It's insane.
I was just thinking that. Yeah, they've been gutted. Truly.
They lost Juice Robinson. They're losing Will Ospreay. They lost Aussie Open. They lost
Jay White.
I feel like there's other ones I'm forgetting here, but that's a lot of people at the top of your card to lose. Kenta wasn't even on this card anywhere. A lot of people who were mainstays there are no longer there. And maybe it doesn't feel like they left because a lot of them are in AEW.
They're in AEW in this, like, you know, the working relationship or whatever. But like it's such a weird thing to think about, like, how New Japan's been gutted so much this year in terms of its roster, and most of them have gone to AEW. Granted, I know most of them are foreigners who, like, you know, probably would do better in an English-speaking audience anyway, but it's like, man, I don't know how beneficial this working relationship has been for New Japan.
No, I think, I mean, like, this leads great to the next question of, like, what do we make of the shocking news that Hiroshi Tanahashi is your new president.
President Tanahashi.
It seems like they really cleared house.
Yeah. And
from what I've you know, I went to the New Japan Reddit to kind of get a better understanding of this, and it seems like the Bushiroad shareholders were unhappy with the regime and were like, we need people out. So, yeah. But it is kind of shocking to me that they turned to an active wrestler as the president.
I mean, I'm not against it. Like, it sounds great. I'm happy for Tanahashi. I'm excited to see, like, if we notice any changes in the direction of New Japan. If anything, it could be a positive in that, you know, the numerous talent that have left over the past couple of years, perhaps this could be a reason for them to maybe come back, you know, have some other people maybe dip their feet into New Japan, knowing that Tanahashi is going to be in the one taking the reins.
Mm-hmm. I think it's also tough for New Japan that they put so much of their emphasis in the past few years into appealing to a Western audience and like loading up on big gaijin wrestlers and like doing New Japan strong, and they just picked the worst time ever to do that in terms of pandemic and the AEW of it all. Yeah. That very suddenly that
it's not their fault, but dang.
Yeah. Two other big things there I want to touch on. Nick Nemeth, aka Dolph Ziggler, showed up looking real professional for the triple threat for the new version of the IWGP US heavyweight title. I know that's not what it's called anymore, but that's what
it's what replacing. It
yeah. Dave Finley beat Will Ospreay.
And Dave Finley John Moxley, with the biggest win of his career.
Leader of the Bullet Club right now. Tyler, how many people could you name who are currently in the Bullet Club?
Oh,
not
man.
To put you on the spot.
Let's see. Okay, so, I know Dave Finley. I think Clark Connors is Bullet Club.
Clark Connors is in the Bullet Club.
I love me some Clark Connors.
Those were the two that I got.
I know right some now Clark Connors. Well. Let's see. Oh, man. G.O.D. is no longer in, correct?
Correct.
Oh boy!
And Evil is no longer in because technically the House of Horror or whatever they're called are not.
Oh wow! Okay.
In
I got look. There's no way it's Bullet Club can't exist unless Bad Luck Fale's in it. So tell me,
he is still in it.
That's right. That's right. The second he leaves, Bullet Club will just dissolve.
He is the last founding member who is still officially in Bullet Club right now,
and he always will be.
Yes, yeah. You've also got Kenta, Taji Ishimori. Sorry, what would you say?
Yujiro Takahashi.
No, he's in House of Torture. But Chase Owens is still there.
Chase Owens, there he is.
Alex Coughlin, Drilla Maloney, Gabe Kidd, and Gato. That's who we got.
Wow.
And then technically you got Chris Bay and Ace Austin and
over in TNA.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Bullet Club Gold's doing its own Splinter Cell thing.
Exactly. so I say that to say, you know, it seems like we're going to have a feud immediately between Dave Finley and Nick Nemeth for that title, but what do you think of the internet's very much wanting Nick Nemeth to win and overtake leadership of the Bullet Club? Does that feel like a good fit to you, or do you think thanks?
It kind of does.
Yeah.
Maybe not Nick Nemeth being in charge of the Bullet Club. Like, while that's a fun like headline and a fun thing, I'm not as excited for that as I am just excited to see Nick Nemeth be able to wrestle in New Japan in a strong, in doing strong style. Like, man, I'm pumped for that.
Yeah, I think he's going to sneaky have the best year of his career if New Japan is his home.
He's about to have a Matt Cardona year. Like,
yeah. Did you see his free agent vignette?
No, I did. I did not. I saw the media scrum where he attacked Dave Finley.
Yeah, that was pretty great. But he also has like a fully filmed, like short film
did
that is on his Twitter, his X account. And,
tell
everyone
me it's
needs
the same guy who filmed Mox's video. And Malachi's
it feels
video
like it. It feels like it. But this one, his gimmick is he's going by the Wanted Man, right? That is okay. His Nick Nemeth's new thing is the Wanted Man. And the video is if he was Patrick Swayze in Roadhouse. But if the people that Patrick Swayze fought in Roadhouse weren't rednecks but were zombies. He literally goes to like a country western bar and fights zombies. And that is what happens so in the, awesome. The video. So if that is any indication, like it's funny because he looks so much like Swayze in that mm-hmm. video. And then he's like so clean shaven and in a suit at Wrestle Kingdom that I was like, wait a minute, this doesn't, these yeah, two things don't compute. But I very awesome. Much want to see both versions of Nick Nemeth that have been presented to us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Quickly touching on our way too early look at the Royal Rumble, right? This Friday on SmackDown, probably today for most people when you're listening to this episode, we got two big things going on New Year's Revolution of SmackDown. We got Kevin Owens versus Santos Escobar in the finals of a U.S. Title tournament to see who's going to face Logan Paul at the Rumble. And then we also have another big match. We have a triple threat match, that's right, between LA Knight and AJ Styles and Randy Orton to see who will face Roman Reigns for the Undisputed Universal Championship at Royal Rumble, right? Mm-hmm. Do you think whoever wins those two matches on SmackDown on Friday, is it 0% chance that either of them actually win at the Rumble?
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Great. So it doesn't really matter.
0% chance.
Yeah. So then do you have early predictions for a Royal Rumble winner? The only two people officially in it for the men's side are Cody and CM Punk. And for the women's side, officially we have Bayley, Chelsea Green, and the suddenly unbeatable Nia Jax are the three people in there.
Yeah. I mean, let's see. In a weird sense, I mean, for who's going to win the men's Rumble, we've only announced two people, Punk or Cody. And I'm fairly confident it's going to be one of those two. So, like,
yeah.
The other 28 people are kind of irrelevant.
Ooh, okay.
In terms of, because, I mean, look, like, yes, we know Rock is back for potentially a long time, potentially mm-hmm. WrestleMania time. So I think it's obvious that The Rock does not need to win the Rumble to get a match. Yeah. On that same level, Punk doesn't need to win the Rumble to get a match with Seth.
Mm-hmm.
So Cody is probably the right answer. But then again, all of this comes into question of like, well, when are we going to do Roman versus Rock? If we're getting Roman versus potentially Randy Orton, potentially AJ Styles, potentially LA Knight at the Rumble, there's no way if they went through all of this storyline, all of this arranging of schedules to finally get Roman Reigns versus The Rock, they're going to do it like at Fastlane. Like, that's not happening. That's
no,
not
it's happening. WrestleMania or nothing.
Exactly. You know? Like, well, that's what I was getting. Like, I could almost justify it happening at the Rumble, but even that's a stretch. Even that's a huge stretch. If that's definitely not happening at the Rumble, it's at Mania or nothing. That's the only way this is working. Yeah. So, what the hell are we doing with Cody Rhodes?
I don't know. Well, that's a real question that we're going to get into, you know, two episodes from now on our annual way too early WrestleMania card prediction. But I feel like he's bumped. I feel good penciling in The Rock versus Roman.
Roman and Mania.
I feel like Punk winning the Rumble to take on Seth feels right.
Yeah.
It's
wild that I feel like that's 100% accurate already. Like, we don't need any more information.
Let's not jump to Cody. Or actually, you know, should we transition to our second segment of the show and put Cody first? as we just continue this conversation?
Well, hold on. Let's not jump yet. I don't have to talk about Cody. I can talk about other players here.
Sure.
Punk winning makes a lot of sense because I don't know like what he signed in his contract or what Paul might have promised him, mm-hmm. but he would be getting everything that he wanted.
Yeah.
He's never won the Rumble. He gets a Rumble win. Rumble win means he gets that precious WrestleMania main event, whether it's the main event of one night or the second night.
Yeah.
He gets it. So I think Punk is probably a lock in. But man, oh my God, what? How silly would it be if they brought Punk back finally after all of this just to put him in the Rumble and then have Rock be in the Rumble and then he loses? Like, I can't even.
It feels like they promised a lot of things to both Cody and CM Punk. And
they promised
like
a lot of things to a lot of people, it seems.
And now it's like, uh-oh. Man, I was like, would it be fun for Punk to win the Rumble, us all think that he's going to challenge Seth and then be like, well, no, I'm going to challenge Roman because I want to be the actual main event.
That would be wild.
I think the chances of that are zero. But
I think
like,
it's zero. Yeah.
100%. Yeah.
On a more open question, I guess, on the women's side, of mm-hmm. the three who are announced, you said it was Bayley and Ajax and
Chelsea Green.
Chelsea Green.
Yeah.
Do we think any of them have a chance of winning?
No, I don't think so.
Bayley would be a long shot. They would have to really like kickstart this storyline of her potentially getting kicked out of Damage Control and like starting her babyface run over. Like they would really have to get that into gear quickly.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I don't know. I think like it's pretty wide open for me right now. There are a lot of women who could make sense. Becky Lynch could make sense. I think she'll always make sense as a person. I think Charlotte's injury is could have like screwed up some penciled in WrestleMania plans. Maybe now we're kind of reshuffling the deck. Also with Raquel Gonzalez's very strange absence. I mean, she's been diagnosed with a disease that is a degenerative disease. So like, wish her all the best, but it might be a while before she's back. Those are two people who like I think probably were factored into to matches. Jade Cargill seems too early.
Yeah, as long as they've had her already off, you know, trying to retrain her, I think she'll make an appearance for sure. I don't see her winning it. The same is with like, I'm not sure on what her timeline is, if because I think Alexa Bliss has been out because she had a baby, right?
Yeah, she had a baby.
I don't know if that kid's already been born or like how long ago it was born or what. So like maybe she might make an appearance. It doesn't make sense for her to just win after having been gone forever.
Carmella and Corey Graves had a baby as well. Mm-hmm. I think maybe they thought that Mercedes Moné would be here. And
that would be the only potential, the only reason, the explanation for someone to show up who hasn't been around and then immediately win it would be a Sasha Banks, but...
Yeah, well, there's one other person, her former tag team champion, whose contract is also up, could be a surprise addition to the bloodline, you know, that could happen. But I actually kind of how, you know, we're less than a month out from the Rumble, and I really have no idea who's going to win the...
No, exactly. Yeah, we've talked about this. I love the unpredictability of the Rumble. It's my favorite part. So, again, like, my least favorite thing about Rumble is this announcing people beforehand. It's my least favorite trend. I've hated it ever since they started it. It takes away the surprise because at some point you've done the math in your head and you're like, oh, well, there's only two people left. And I know these two people need to show up, so I guess it's them. Like, I hate that. So, and again, like we said, knowing that we only know that Cody and Punk are going to be in the Rumble, and we're pretty sure it's going to be one of those two. So, like, it took out all the fun already.
I know. Well, we're going to transition to something that's a lot more fun.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's the year 2024.
Side note to talk about fun though, I have had Nick Nemeth's video on in the background on mute.
Yeah.
So like, I haven't heard what the sound is to this, but
Tyler,
this is incredible.
The sound doesn't add nor take away from what's going on.
I want this to be a movie. Like, I would watch the movie.
Yeah, it's the best movie of 1985. in the year 2024, we're all thinking about self-improvement, betterment, how to tackle this year and make it bend to our will. And wrestlers are no different from all of us in this regard. So we're going to look at 10 wrestling people, wrestle places, and wrestle things, and decide what their New Year's resolutions should be. Resolutions.
Yeah.
As you much better put it. So we got 10 here. We can go in the order we have here. We can jump around. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
But maybe let's start with the big man, Tony Khan. Tony Khan, what should his resolution be this year?
it's gonna sound kind of cold and crass, but like, just do better.
Oh, wow.
I love you, TK. I appreciate everything you've done for the wrestling business in the last 5 years, but like, this past year of AEW has been a real kind of a dud, and I know it's not all his fault, clearly. But it just, I don't know, man, just give me more.
Mm-hmm. Give me more is a good way to put it.
Don't give me Ryback. Don't give me that.
Give me what I want.
yeah. Give me what I want.
Yeah. I have a way to say, give me what I want, that I think is a bit more self-care. If we're putting ourselves in Tony Khan's shoes of what his resolution is.
Sure.
I think it's like, it's go with the flow. And what I mean by that is that like, the greatest strength of Tony Khan in the booking of AEW is long-term storytelling, as we've said, and having, you know, his marble notebook with like, okay, here's the next 42 weeks of television planned out. But I think we've also seen this year that's been a dud, that it is because of staying on a path, even when there are other circumstances going on. There's been a lack of adaptability. And I think if Tony Khan can react to things not getting good reactions early into like a 40-week storyline, or if like injuries happen, or someone who we didn't expect to become a fan favorite suddenly is, that, you know, you should listen to that and go with the flow and be okay with adapting on the fly. You know, I think that I think it would free him to be able to do that, to say, you know what, let me throw away this whole thing that I had, and we're going to do something different.
Now, I think this is like besides the point, but like, I just feel, I have a worry, an internal worry for Tony Khan, that he is becoming what he hates. Like, Not like hey, hate's a strong word, but like, again, the founding of AEW, all of this was built upon this promise of like AEW being something different from WWE, an alternative, something, you know, by the wrestlers, for the wrestlers, all that jazz. And like, just in the last 2 years, Tony Khan has just been slowly metamorphosizing into a Vince McMahon.
Sure.
Like, AEW that began as this clear collective vision of multiple people, Cody, the Bucks, Kenny, Tony, having somewhat equal input, say, and storylines and stuff, has molded into Tony's show with Tony's choices and Tony's picks, Tony's stories, Tony's running Ring of Honor, he runs AEW, like, he's becoming,
and Fulham and the Jaguars.
Yes, he's just becoming Vince.
Yeah.
And like, I hope he sees that before it's too late. Okay, moving on.
Should his resolution actually then be like, to ask for help when he needs it?
Yes.
To delegate?
Yes. He needs to go to therapy.
Sure. Yeah. I know a guy, Tony.
Tony.
We can make this work. The next person on the list is Cody.
Cody
Rhodes, the American Nightmare.
Oh,
I'll start on this one.
Yes, please.
This is a guy who's obsessed with finishing his story, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like Cody doesn't need to derive his self-worth from whether he can finish his story or not. I feel like...
The takeaway is just going to be, you guys all just need to go to therapy.
I think that's kind of what we're doing. And maybe we are having... Like... We're starting a therapy session for people who have not agreed to do it. My resolution, if I were Cody, would be to make every match that I'm in feel like the main event, even if it is not.
Yeah.
And I think it's like, maybe it's because we both sense that maybe he's not going to be the main event at WrestleMania this year.
Yeah.
But like, if he's a truly popular white meat babyface in 2024, right? And that's a hard thing to do without people being sick of you. So I feel like that is like more powerful than even, that's more power than even Roman or The Rock or CM Punk or Seth Rollins has. So like let them have that. It doesn't matter. He's going to be the attraction. You know,
I'm hopeful again. Like we have said, like Cody has pleasantly surprised us in his longevity within his current run back in WWE. Like when he came back and we didn't think that he was going to get the spot that, you know, maybe he was hoping for. And then he did. And then he won the Rumble. And then he went to Mania and he lost. And that's when I thought, I was like, okay, that's the nail in the coffin. Cody's going to be back in the mid card. But he didn't. He is still, like, you know, besides the, you know, the LA Knight phenomenon that happened, like, he's still the number one face in the company. Yeah. He's still the guy. The crowd's still behind Cody. They still love him. So there is potential. There is a chance that Cody will one day finish the story.
Yeah.
I just don't know when.
Yeah. It's hard. can I throw one fantasy booking out quickly?
Please do.
And then we'll touch on it later. Cody at WrestleMania beating Gunther for the IC title.
Yes, I'm for it. I love it. Again, my worry is just that, like, is that his consolation prize? Is that him being like, well, you know, we're not going to have you beat Roman and beat Roman's streak, but we'll let you beat Gunther's streak.
I think it could be a stepping stone.
Could be both.
I think it could be like this. I'm not finishing my story, but Gunther, I'm finishing your story right now. And like, and then it also frees up Gunther to go for the world title.
It's wild. But so here's the thing. We talked about like how, you know, with Rock being back, if he is going to face Roman, it has to be at Mania and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure Roman is going to beat Rock at Mania.
Yeah, like, yeah, there's no way.
I'm pretty sure Roman beats him, in which case, yeah, I suppose Cody could then finish the story at a later date at that point.
Yeah.
But man.
Yep. Long term.
Too long. I know. Look, this is.
We're in Gone with the Wind territory.
Is this our comeuppance? Have we been hoisted on our own petard that we told WWE to? We wanted long term storylines, and they were like, "Okay, bet."
Are we going to be talking about whichever promotion masters short term storytelling next year? And be like, you know, micro storytelling, man. Really. A really effective way.
Everything I wanted in 3 months. It was perfect.
Next up, this is a wrestle place. I guess they're wrestle people as well. TNA and TNA management. They're no longer Impact Wrestling. They've rebranded.
Yeah.
They're TNA management. What should their resolution be for this year, this new year as TNA?
In terms of specifics, I would say, you know, find either pick someone on your roster to just really get behind and like try to make a star out of them, or hope that you sign a free agent who can just like really help you out. I'm not sure if the rebranding back to TNA is going to do anything. I like it. Don't get me wrong. I like it already. I think it's a fun, you know, interesting. It's new. It's different. I'm cool. Let's go. But I don't know if it's actually going to do anything for them.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think that like the legs of it are in the announcement and in like, oh, we're TNA now. Like things might look different. But then once that is over, it's over. Yeah. I think like the resolution should be like to redefine what TNA means. Because I loved early TNA, but unfortunately I think like I'm most shocked that they went back to this brand because it seemed poisoned to me. It seemed like lol TNA and like what is blank doing in the impact zone is like really think about the bad about TNA.
Yeah. I was going to say, cause like it could be that idea of, you know, trying to, you know, catch lightning in a bottle a second time. Cause again, like we said, that early on TNA, that like first year, 2 years that they were on Spike, like, man, that was hot. Like that was some good stuff. I loved watching that TNA. Yeah. So it absolutely soured, it poisoned, it became something else that definitely put a stink on the name. So I wonder if they're hoping that they can, you know, recapture that first initial hype, but
yeah. I mean, like how I would rebrand TNA right now is I would lean away from anything that is like nihilistic or sad, or like I would intentionally maybe just like book the faces to win for the next few months and like not, like really be like we are going to be
only good endings here
for the people live at the shows. Let's actually just like have the most fun. Let's not take ourselves too seriously. Let's really give a fun show that has the fans go home happy every time. And if you do that, and if the people live are feeling that way, then that energy is going to translate. Yeah. 'Cause I feel like there's been a lack of like energy on if you watch TNA on TV.
Oh yeah.
This next question, this next wrestle person, wrestle concept, I had it written down as the WWE women's roster, but if you also want to make a resolution for the AEW women's roster, just women's wrestling in general, what should their resolution be?
I think they're going to be different for different companies though. So like, look, the WWE women's roster, I mean, I'm sure people can find issues and find qualms with it. I think it's just fine, man.
Yeah.
Like, I think they have done an incredible job at, you know, pushing the already established stars that they've had in the last 10 years, but also cultivating new ones. I mean, Rhea Ripley is easily the biggest, like, women's star in the company. And she's excellent. She's incredible. She's had an amazing year. And I think, you know, she's like 27 or something. Like, she has such a long career ahead of her. Like all of the female NXT talent that they have brought in have done excellent. They're super engaging. Yeah. They're incredible athletes. I think WWE women's roster is just fine.
The women are the highlight of NXT right now.
Absolutely. I would say.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think the women's roster in WWE is just fine. AEW is, you know, there's some improvement to be made for sure.
Deonna Purrazzo.
They do have Deonna Purrazzo. That's a good start.
Mariah May.
I think, you know, the issues in AEW women's roster, it's certainly different. Not at any fault to the performers or, you know, their characters or the performances inside the ring. It's definitely leads to, you know, they just need to be given more of that chance. They need more TV time, more spots, things like that.
Yeah, I think my resolution for the AEW women's roster is be undeniable. I think like if you're not being given a lot of time, take the time you have and make it so good that Tony has to put more segments.
Has to
on
give
the
you
show.
More time. Yeah.
I think like Toni Storm has gotten more time recently than I think we would have guessed a few months ago.
Yeah, sure.
You know, they're getting Thunder Rosa back right now. Mm-hmm. They're getting Serena Deeb back right now. Like, mm-hmm. there's a lot of they might be getting Mercedes Moné.
They have such potential.
Yeah. And this seems like a time to really just make it so people can't not put you on TV. I know that's easier said than done, but that
of course,
has to be
yeah.
the mindset.
I'm sure they've been told that by everyone for the last 3 years.
Sure.
But like,
yeah. I just think it is amazing how much the WWE women's roster have created an amazing mid-card.
Yes.
Even if they don't have like a mid-card title, like the mid-card feels so strong, and that's like there never was a mid-card in women's wrestling in the past. It was just like, who's the champion and who's the challenger of the month
exactly.
kind of thing.
Yeah.
And like that still feels like where AEW is stuck, even yeah. though they have been like their mid-card title has been pushing, you know, Julia Hart and Sky Blue and like people that we didn't expect. But mm-hmm. maybe it just feels like there's a lot of top tier talent that maybe are just kind of waiting to be used. Speaking this is a bad transition for me. Speaking of the women's roster, Chris Jericho, let's talk about this in a way. If we were Chris Jericho right now, what would our New Year's resolution be?
just take some time off, bud.
Yeah. This is the easiest one on here, I think.
Just take some time off. Like, go, if you want to go back on tour with Fozzy, go do that. If you want to go on a extended cruise, just take some time off, bud.
Yeah. You got to go away and have people miss you. I'm like, yeah. It's funny because we talked about, like, this is a time where AEW needs, like, some established stars, but Chris is certainly not the one.
He's right certainly now. Not the one. And, like, I'm not even going to, like, attempt to speak to, like, the controversy.
Yeah,
just for him, like, just take some time off, like,
yeah, nothing there's nothing to be gained.
Yeah, it can't hurt taking some time off while you being on the TV every week going forward might.
Yeah. It's a real problem. It really derailed the Sting match. And I even though he wasn't on Dynamite last night, mm-hmm. you know, there was a guy in the crowd who started walking around with a, like, Jericho Forever sign or something like that, and people were booing him. And, like, that, you don't want that going on
no.
at the show. It's a distraction.
Yeah.
From one problematic male to another, Kevin Dunn.
Mm.
Kevin Dunn. Some people who listen to the show might not know who Kevin Dunn is. Tyler,
yes.
could you give us a quick primer on what we need to know about him?
Kevin Dunn is of a way to say this that makes sense. Kevin Dunn is a shitty Darth Vader. He has been Vince McMahon's right-hand man for 30 years, mm-hmm. has had a major hand and a major choice in all of the positive and very poor decisions that WWE has made in the past 30 years.
Yeah.
He is the one in charge. He's the one responsible for giving everyone a horrible sense of vertigo from all the jump cuts from watching WWE.
he is the guy in the production truck.
He's the guy in the production truck. He's yeah, calling yeah. all the shots. And yeah. he has left WWE or will be leaving extremely soon, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. What should his resolution be? He is someone who, like, at sometimes, like, people have championed his work while criticizing him as a human being as being kind of nasty.
Look, again, like, I can't speak to his, you know, him being a shitty human being, but, like, just ride off into the sunset, bud.
Yeah.
You did it. You ran WWE basically for 30 years. You've made a bunch of money, probably. Like, just go.
There are other things to produce that are live events beyond wrestling. If you really want to do it,
if you
and those
really,
people won't have a preconceived notion of you, whether
exactly.
you earned it or not.
You really have to go produce something, if you just got to continue to create, then just go do it somewhere else. But like, I don't see any issue with just going home, man.
Yeah. So like the in his own head resolution for me, I guess, for Kevin Dunn would be like, go see what else is out there.
Yeah.
My suggestion for him is like, go do something to help someone else.
Go be a positive influence on the world.
Think maybe. About your situation. Go to therapy. Think about, go read all the comments that every other, female employee at WWE has said about you over the years, and really sit with that. From a not golden lover to a golden lover, Kota Ibushi just had a pretty not great match, the last match that he worked. I don't know if you watched the footage from that, Tyler. It was tough to watch.
I have not, actually, no.
Yeah. Kota Ibushi worked a match with supposedly broken ankles and really had a hard time getting over the ropes for a few spots. If you were Kota, this is a tough man to get in the head of give advice to. But what is a way and ethos he should have for this new year.
Yeah, I just think he should take care of himself. I mean,
is this three straight people that were like, go away?
Yes, but for different reasons, of course.
Sure. Yes. Yeah.
But like Kota, he just needs to take care of himself. I think, like, don't get me wrong, like when he made his like AEW debut this past year and like he had those brief couple matches with the Elite and stuff, I was happy to see him, but it was very obvious that he was not the same Kota. And while I couldn't and would not hold it against him if he never was going to be that Kota again, but like I just hope he, heals up and takes care of himself.
Yeah.
I mean, he's getting up there. He's like in his mid-40s now. Like, take care of yourself.
Even if he looks 18, he is.
Take care of yourself. Look, potentially, as devastating it would be to a wrestling fan, potentially start looking towards chapter 2 of your life. What's Kota going to do after this?
I would say follow the lead of your friends.
Yeah.
Kenny Omega, his friend/lover, realized that he needed to stop trying to push through potentially awful pain. He could have died from diverticulitis, if he didn't go to the doctor when he did. And I think hopefully looking at his friend will make Kota realize that, what is important and what is not. Wrestle Therapy should be our new podcast. We should just change
this
it.
This
is a great format.
Look, Andrew and I are nowhere near certified therapists, but I think we've had some good points here. Just saying.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this is great. I'm going to talk to my therapist about it, and he's going to be like, please stop doing this.
please stop.
Don't make a mockery of my profession.
This is not okay.
Mercedes Moné, we have next. Mm. She's the biggest free agent out there right now.
Yes.
What should her approach to the year be?
So Mercedes is going to be actually the opposite of what we've been saying, is don't go home. I want her to be everywhere. Wrestle as much as you can for as many places as you want. If that means going back to WWE to debut in the Rumble, excellent. If it means going to AEW, excellent. If it means going back to New Japan for a spell, excellent. TNA, I don't care. I miss me some Mercedes Moné in the ring. I can't wait till she's back.
Yeah. I want her to decide what motivates her. I think, like, figure out what motivates her.
Mm.
And if it is, like, get in the bag.
If it is Moné.
Yeah, if it's getting the money, and if it's, like, going back to WWE and taking a big bag and, putting some people over in some big matches, more power to you. We would be happy to be along for the ride. But I think it would be equally valiant for her to be like, I'm going to go to places where I'm the biggest fish and try to improve the situation for the other women at these promotions and lift them up,
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think she could do a lot for AEW if she went in with that mindset and not a like, I'm here to be the star. Yeah, that is a locker room that does not need it. They need a leader, and you know, that could be a valiant attempt. Otherwise, we get CM Punk too, and we don't want that.
We do not.
The other soon to be free agents out there, the Drew McIntyres, the MJFs, the Andrades, even though he might not be a free agent anymore.
Already. We were too late.
The wanted man, Nick Nemeth. What should be the ethos for the free agents out there?
Just do everything you can. Make it count would be my, you know, summary. Make it count. Make whatever you're doing now that you are quote unquote free from the system and you have the choice of where to go and what to do, like, make it count.
Mm-hmm. I think it's be your own boss is my
join a union.
Yeah, join a union. There you go. Might not be a great career choice if you are in wrestling, but otherwise it's great. But like, I think like even if Andrade signs with WWE tomorrow and has a literal boss, like I think you have to be okay with being a little career selfish for yourself and only putting yourself in a position that will elevate you. Because you don't want to be a free agent, go to another place, and then justify your previous employer's lack of confidence in you. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. Be the best version of yourself. This is a wrestle thing. Wrestle items.
Mm-hmm.
This is the stable, the harem of AEW championship titles. What should their What do we think they're thinking? What should their goal be for this year?
I mean, I know what my goal for them to be is consolidate, but
yeah,
it's funny how in such short time AEW has become just synonymous with having too many belts.
Yeah,
and like I never really thought that was a problem, especially when compared with like WWE. But then like.
They both have too many belts, honestly. Is there any place that doesn't have too many belts right now?
That's a good point.
New Japan has too many belts.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, and it's, I don't know when it became the issue, but like being a wrestling fan and watching wrestling, it's almost like we've been, you know, obviously, yes, having a belt is an important thing. And like it can be a milestone accomplishment for the performer themselves. It can be more money, all these things. But like at some point as fans, we've been conditioned to feel that like, you know, if they don't have a belt, if they don't have some physical proof of accomplishment, then like, what are they doing there?
Mm-hmm.
And so while I understand that to a sense, and like, yes, that's obviously the reasoning for having this plethora, this oversaturation of belts. Clearly most of them are not needed. I wish that AEW would get rid of a few of them. And because it, again, like we said, it makes the ones left matter that much more. So, I don't know specifically which ones I would get rid of, off the top of my head, but I could come up with a few.
I think that I would ask the title belts to define their uniqueness.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I think having too many titles is not a problem if they each serve a very specific purpose, but right now they don't feel that way. I feel like Orange Cassidy did a really good job of making the AEW Intercontinental title feel unique.
Yeah.
This year. Like I knew that was the like defended on TV in like the workhorse kind of title for the year. Did I say the name of the title right? Did I get
it
wrong?
I think it's the International.
International, sorry.
But
it's International, but then Eddie Kingston now is the Continental Championship. I don't like that those two words are that similar to each other.
I think it's early enough that, well, I guess no, because we've already established somebody, I don't remember who, is challenging Kingston for the belt pretty soon. So, like, that was my gonna be, okay, so that already defeats my purpose. I was gonna say, like, we, depending on how the Continental belt's gonna work, like, if it's like a diamond ring situation where the belt can only be won in the classic, like, yeah, that's one thing, but it seems like it is just another belt they've added. So
it's weird because that's like, it is just like the thing that holds together two belts from two other companies, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's weird to be like, we have to have a triple crown, but like, I feel like the Continental, the International, and the TNT title are all secondary titles that are serving the same purpose.
Agreed. Right now. And they, and all three of those kind of sit at the same level, which isn't necessarily a problem, but like it, if you had some more differentiation between them, like it creates more, it defines them more.
Yeah. I almost feel like they're defining the TNT title as currently as like the sports entertainment title. The more like gimmicky storylines are going through that title.
I don't hate that. I think that's cool. That we have a direction for that belt then we know what we're looking for. Great. Put it on Jericho next after some time away.
But for a little while it was like the Hoss title.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Just some consistency. And what makes those three different from each other. I don't know what to make of the Continental title, and I don't know if it will be a thing after Eddie loses it or one of the other two titles, you know?
We'll see.
Yeah. Final question. Mm. Final resolution. WWE creative team. You know, they've had the Bloodline storyline. It's carried the weight. Saw plenty of branching storylines the past year. We got a lot of Judgment Day kind of stepping up when Bloodline was not there. Can they do it again this year? Should they even try? What should the goal be
of
the WWE creative team?
I think no matter what we say, they're going to do it.
Oh, they're going to try, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, the only thing, like, that I could suggest as a resolution for the Bloodline is would be like something along the lines of like, try it again. And I mean that specifically that you and I have heard being actors within a production where you do a scene or something and you feel really good about it. And the director pulls you aside and they're like, great, try it again.
Yeah.
And what they mean with that intention is give me something else. Give me something new. Try something else, like something exciting. And like the Bloodline is great. The Bloodline has been great, but it is undoubtedly stale, predictable, and I need something new. If you're going to keep this going, if we're going to go through another WrestleMania with Roman as a champion and he leaves the champion. He's probably on track now to beat Hogan's record at 1,000 someday. No, like 1,400 days, like four years as champion. Like that feels like the new goal that they're trying to get Roman to, and that's fine. But give me something new. Give me an exciting new direction that I haven't predicted 4 months ago.
Yeah, that's certainly, I think you really tied it into the conceit of this show better than I ever could. I have basically the same resolution as you. It is just worded in a little bit of a different way. Of course. And it is that don't be afraid to take the shot.
Yeah.
You know, if you see an ending that's going to be earlier than you expected, do it. Don't delay. Strike while people are still interested. Don't let this turn to a point that the greatest positive in a storyline in a era of the company that's going to be celebrated in future, you know, documentaries and DVD releases. Like, this is a really high point. So get out while the getting is good, you know.
Yeah.
Take the shot. That would be my resolution for them. and I think it will be in this year.
In the almighty words of Kenny Rogers, know when to fold them.
Yes. You started so eloquent, I went a little bit under, and I feel like now we're just like going further and further away from what it should be. Just looking at the title reigns. Oh, this is the combined reign. I was trying to look and see how many days he needs to beat Hogan, but it's not what I'm looking at.
No, it's not combined. It's Hogan's longest reign. I don't remember when it happened, probably in the 80s or something.
Yeah.
I believe it was like 1,400 days, something like that. And Roman, we already know, is past 1,000. I don't know exactly how far he needs to go to beat Hogan's, but I think that is the new logical goal line, right?
Yeah. Here, I think I'm pulling it up. This is what we'll end with, is looking at these these numbers.
It's impossible for him to reach Bruno. That's impossible. Bruno held the title for like 10 years. Like, there's no way. That I don't think that's physically possible.
Yeah, Bruno's was 1,237 days, but I think...
Well, that was like his second run or something. His longest reign was like 8,000 or some shit like that. Like,
it's a lot.
And then I think
it was 2,800. 2,800.
Like, second longest, and then
yeah,
Hogan.
Bruno is 2,800, and Bob is 2,100.
Okay, yeah.
But Roman's current reign is not. It would be like halfway there. Basically, he's at 1,221 days.
Okay.
So he could go past Backlund if he holds it for another 3 years.
That's a couple WrestleManias.
Oh boy, God. I don't think it's gonna happen. I think he's past any kind of statistical anomaly that you could want for him, and it's time to maybe get to the ninth inning of this story.
God,
okay.
Yeah, you sure hope so.
This is the ninth inning of this podcast right now. That is it for our resolutions. Next week we're going to do a review of the Iron Claw movie.
Yeah.
And talk about wrestling movies. Mm-hmm. We're going to rank our favorite sons and our favorite wrestling movies. And then it's almost Royal Rumble time, and we will be doing something for that as well, I'm sure. Anything you want to plug on our way out, Tyler?
I got nothing, my man.
Yeah. My movie Dummy is going to be at the Love Your Shorts Film Festival near Orlando, Florida. It's not in Orlando, but it's near Orlando in February. I don't have the date yet. And then I think, you know, knock on wood, God willing, I'm going to have a lot more film festival dates for that coming up here soon. So
hey,
if you're coming to a town near you, come see my 13-minute movie. So, all right. So as always, we're going to leave you with the words of the immortal William Shakespeare. If wrestling be the food of love, fight on.
It should have been me! Wait, it was me! That's what you should have said.
Yeah, that would have been great. There were a lot of good sound bites in that.